everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Tacticam. Tacticam is by far the easiest way to begin filming your hunts. Whether it's the budget-friendly solo or the 4K 5.0, Tacticam has something for everyone. Check them out at tacticam.com. This year, we're also working with Spartan Forge. Spartan Forge is machine learning for the deer woods. Basically, Spartan Forge takes collared deer studies, insurance car deer accident information, social media geolocations, and it couples that with weather, moon phase, and rut activity to tell you when or when not to be in the woods. This currently has an online interface at spartanforge.ai, but the app is currently being built and set to launch late summer. Once the app goes live, you can expect there to be a price increase, but if you use code BOWHUNTER, you can save 25%, and that will stick with you as long as you use the Spartan Forge services. So head on over to spartanforge.ai and get your free 14-day trial. Welcome back, everybody, for another great episode. More tactics. This week, William Ritchie from Bed to Dead is on to talk trail cams. Now, this is the second podcast that he's been on. I've been trying to get him on for quite some time. And just a great young kid with a great attitude towards hunting, helping out people. And amongst other things, I mean, he is running probably more trail cameras than anyone that we're going to talk to ever. And in doing so, he's learned a lot of things about deer movement, getting on a lot of deer. So I think it's really helpful. A lot of good information in this one. I know you guys are going to really enjoy it. Shout out to the Patreon group, man, that is growing. The Patreons are going in, on that Marco Polo group. A lot of messages. So for everybody that's in there, give me some feedback on how you're liking it. We're talking some elk hunting. We're talking gear setups, working on our rules and regulations for the Critter Getter contest, kind of to make bow hunting fun again, I guess. It's been said in there that kind of reminds them of like when they were a kid going out and, you know, we're going to shoot some squirrels and grouse and all the things with a bow. So let me know what you guys are thinking about that. No new Patreons yet in August, but that's all right. Patreon isn't for everybody, but it really does help us out, and we do our best to give back to you guys. So what that does is that helps us with new equipment, with upgrading everything that we're doing. You know, out-of-state hunts, going to shows, meeting up with guests, being able to do some of these interviews in person, things like that. But we also want to give back, and we do that in conjunction with our partners, as well as going out of pocket to give back quarterly. So this quarter, Tacticam is giving away an LR spotter. So we've been using that out scouting some deer for my daughter for the youth hunt. And goes right on your spotting scope. And you can just click record and it records right through there. It's not a phone adapter or anything like that. You just put it on there. It adapts directly to the spotting scope, and you're recording. You can digitally zoom on that as well. So pretty cool. Really enjoying using that. They're giving away one of those. We are giving away another full saddle hunting package, and this one includes, now we did do a review on these and they have been on a tree, but the impossible to get, hard to find tethered one sticks. So we are trying to figure out a way to give those away. We're going to give them away in this package. Going to be tethered one sticks, one of the new Latitude Method saddles. So Method or Method XL, depending on which you choose. EDP platform from Trophy Line. And we'll give away the new Trophy Line ropes with that. They have got some nice pliable 8mm ropes. And with those, we are, they did listen to us, so they've got just one sewn eye. They don't have a different size for the lineman's belt. And really nice ropes, nice light, much like the tethered ropes. But so we're going to be giving all that away to somebody, LR spotter to somebody, saddle package to somebody. And then our partners jump in. So we're partnered with Basemap. Basemap, if you're not using a GPS mapping, scouting software. I mean, I use the thing for everything, especially like, I mean, when you're going somewhere that you've never been before and you want to see which house is theirs, what does it look like? How far is it down there? But they've got some awesome features, tons and tons of scouting features in there, tons of layers. And the price is $30 for the entire year. You can use code Chronicles when you go online, save 20%, and it's $24. So it ends up being $2 a month. So if you're not using this and you're hunting any public land, if you're hunting out of state, if you're hunting elk, you know, you need to be using something, and Basemap is a great option for that. And they're giving away one of their year subscriptions along with the hat and shirt swag pack. Spartan Forge, that app is in the beta testing right now. Guys like Andy May, Taylor Chamberlain, Garrett Prawl, Parker McDonald, Greg Litziger, these guys are all testing it out, working with Bill to make the best app possible, make it user-friendly, have all the features that they would want for telling you what days are going to be in the woods, along with the notes section, all different things to help you be more efficient in the woods. And he's giving away a year subscription to that. And then our friends at Zinger, they're giving away one of their packs of their new Z2 Zinger. So Zingers are compression fit 3D printed fletchings, and shot them. I've been shooting them all year, shot them at the Toad Larger Challenge. They fly great. Good guys, Michigan guys, and we want to see them do well. So it's great to be, you know, working with them and be able to try out their stuff and get it out there so that more people are aware of it. So, and all that, you, if you want to be a part of that, you can go to patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles Podcast. You can go to bowhunterchroniclespodcast.com. You can click on the link in our Instagram and you just sign up, and you can get entered to win all that stuff. It helps us out. But, you know, if that's not for you, not a big deal. We do have our Marco Polo group, like I said, where we're talking with these guys, interacting every day, basically all day, because literally we have Patreons from Washington State all the way to Rhode Island and Maryland, and, you know, lots of states in between. So the time zones get interesting on all of that. But we just try and put out the best information that we can out there to help you. And we really do appreciate everybody that listens. And yeah, I mean, basically everybody that is listening, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the episode. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bow Hunter Chronicles podcast. John is up in the UP, doing some, you know, family fun time, but he's staying with his buddy where he hunts up there. So he's going to be out doing some scouting, I guarantee it. But so it's just going to be me tonight, and we have on the line William Ritchie, who, you know, I've been talking back and forth for, I think, a couple of years with him, trying to get him on the podcast. And, you know, it was just, I don't know, you know, and he's, you know, super helpful, you know, wants to help me out. He was telling me, you know, he could put me on some deer, and, you know, he just shares like all these incredible trail cam photos. Like, I mean, more bucks than I've ever seen. Like, if you could take like maybe one of his cameras, and it's probably got more bucks on it than I have ever had on all my cameras combined. But you say, how could that be? Well, we'll get into that, because he's running an exorbitant amount of trail cam. So how are you doing tonight, William?
Pretty good. I mean, pretty happy to talk to you. It's been a while, and it's been a while for me to like get enough confidence to come on here and speak what I want to speak and hear what people want to hear. So,
well, it's just funny because, like, you know, we go back and forth here and there. Like, I follow along with you on social media, and then it's like you shared something like on this podcast, and I was like, you son of a bitch. Like, I've been trying for so long, you know, but.
Well, I mean, I had to start somewhere, and those guys, it was kind of like a thrown like right to my feet, and I just said, screw it, I'll do it and see if I can break that barrier that I kept up for so long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so that one is the Back, and then there's a space Country PA podcast. And I hadn't heard of those guys at all, but they seem to be having a lot of fun over there.
Oh, yeah. Seem like they're definitely a bunch of drinking fools, let's put it that way, and they have fun. That's really all that matters, so.
Exactly. Exactly. So for the listeners who may not be familiar with you or haven't seen any of the stuff that you've been sharing, you know, give us a little bit of history of you coming up and hunting. Like your hunting history, like where you started as a kid and things.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was always fascinated with hunting, and I mean, I always fished, and I've trapped, I've done it pretty much all almost. And then I started really getting serious about hunting until like after I was 18, but I pretty much like grew my roots in the UP. I mean, our family had a camp up there. I mean, I spent every summer with my grandparents. They lived like right there in the UP too. So that's where I spent most of my time when I wasn't at school. And then, I mean, I was always fascinated with deer camp. Like my dad would go away for deer camp and I always wanted to go. I mean, it was just always my thing. I would even go sit out in the woods on opening day, even when I was like 7 or 8 years old, in my old backyard when we grew up on the farm and just watched deer. I mean, I was just that fascinated about it. So that's really where it started. And then, I mean, I killed my first deer when I was 12 with a bow. And then from there, I mean, it's never ended. It just turned into like a weekday to a weekend thing to a legit obsession. And I just can't get over it now. I mean, besides hunting whitetails, I mean, I hunt ducks and geese and pretty much anything that can walk and you can hunt legally, shoot turkeys every year. So, I mean, that's pretty much where it all began. And then I live in southern Michigan. So, and then I still hunt the UP to this day. Still run cameras up there. I mean, just wherever I could find a big deer, really.
And so with your growing up like that, did you grow up like learning about, you know, deer hunting and tactics and chasing big bucks? Or was it more, I don't know, I guess wholesome, I guess, like just go out and hunt and have fun?
It was more of like a family wholesome thing. I mean, it was the time that I got to see my grandparents. And I mean, my grandpa hunted like everybody did back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, everybody ran a bait pile and you went out in the woods and you nailed together a tree fort basically to sit in and you drew the deer to you. And I mean, that's how I learned to hunt. But then when I was 15, I killed a really good buck in the UP with a rifle. And then from there on, I started to like read magazines and you can only watch so much TV about it. But I mean, those guys, they all hunt private land and stuff that like I can't even touch anyways, either way. But I mean, just learning like catching deer without using bait piles, I guess funnels and like ridge points and transition areas, like pretty much all of it. And then, I mean, it just kept progressing from there. And then when it was probably like 10 years ago, I come across the Hunting Beast, and it wasn't really that I wasn't already really mobile, but I moved from a climber to a lone wolf stand and went like really mobile. And I was already like using transition areas and stuff, but like, I didn't really call them that. I just knew the deer always hung out there. But then like with the Hunting Beast, it really singled down like what I was doing and what I needed to look for. It made it more simple than like being scatterbrained out there and be like, well, there's all these deer over here, but then there's all these deer over here, but then the big bucks are right here. But, you know, it just kept progressing to where I would single down where those big deer would be.
And so in doing that, what What did you find that you were doing right? And was there anything that you felt like you were kind of doing wrong? Because I feel like we talked about it a little bit before the podcast, but I think that that's where people get hung up, right? Is you either get overwhelmed by too much information or you're just, you know, striking out completely.
I would pretty much say that, like, there's two types of guys. You want to hunt like a single bed, or do you want to hunt a primary bedding area? And when you switch between the two, a single bed, how do you know he's actually really there though, besides like tracks and sign? But usually most of those bucks are there because there's a primary bedding area. And I mean, once the action starts getting heated up towards the end of October, you want to hunt the primary bedding area where all the deer are mostly anyways. And I mean, if you go out there and like get scatterbrained and you're thinking like way too much information at once, you're not actually like scouting either. You're overthinking everything you're doing, when out there, the best thing you can do is keep it simple and just like try to remember a couple things like off the top of your hand, like tracks and like, maybe there's some browse out there, or what are they doing as food wise? And like, why would they be over there and not over here? And like, maybe like the public, because I only hunt public, what's on the other side of the public into the private land that would keep the deer to feed over there, but they'd still come stay in the public? I mean, stuff like that. Like, you want to keep it as simple as you can. When you get overwhelmed out there, that's when you just like, you're scouting, you feel like you're scouting, you feel like you're doing something, but you're actually not really doing anything at all. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think like for myself, like I hunted that way like for a long time, because I would think that I just needed to be out there hunting, but I was in the completely wrong area, or it was a bad day, like bad wind, or it was a spot that I just went to that was like easy or comfortable, but I was just wasting my time.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm almost 30 now, but I would say back, if I knew what I knew now 10 years ago, like right off the bat, it'd probably be even more unbelievable what I could do. But when I was 18, 19, 20, I mean, I would say I put too much time into caring what some products were out there for than actually just hunting deer and playing the wind. Like, I never cared. And I mean, I got lucky, and I would say I was pretty lucky most of the time. And I must have just had a horseshoe up my ass, if you really want to know the truth. But in all cases, I would say that you just can't get overwhelmed, and you got to think somewhat of like what you're doing. Like, I'll tell you one thing, one big thing that me and Jason always talk about is being organized. And I think if you go out there and you just throw everything all together and you're like wasting all this time putting it together, or you don't put your hunts together every night before. I mean, like, I work at night. So I mean, as soon as I get off from deer hunting, I literally run home, take a shower and go back to work. But that whole entire 8 hours there, all I'm thinking about is my next step, where I want to be and where I want to go or what I see. And that's like, especially for people that aren't seeing deer, and maybe they're just singling out way too much, and maybe they're just not progressing as like just trying to hunt deer. I mean, like, that's really when I was 18, 19, 20, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to hunt deer. I didn't care if I found the biggest buck in the woods or the smallest buck or whatever. It was just fascinating even just seeing deer and watching them. And I mean, if I got a shot off, and which a lot of times I did, but it didn't really matter to me either way. I mean, I was still seeing deer out there, because coming from only hunting like a couple little private places to expanding my whole horizon to hunt in public. And because I just keeping like relationships with people for private land is kind of hard these days, especially when it's a big lease game too, especially here in Michigan. Like, there's so many people that like, you used to be able to hunt all these farms, and you're not able to anymore because they're all leased out. And then you're on a waiting list pretty much to get that lease. So I had to learn how to hunt public like right off the bat. But also, I was trying to like expand my horizon, and I also liked the adventure. I mean, I could walk the same piece 300 times, and every time I go out there and I learn something new.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that learning and that going out there and hunting deer, One of the reasons that I wanted to bring you on, because like I said there right at the beginning, is there's probably not anybody out there that you're going to hear from that runs more trail cameras than you do. And so let's talk a little bit about how you started running trail cameras and how it progressed, and how many are you running?
All right. Well, it all started with probably like five cameras, and I put my five out and I'm like, man, there's over there that I explored, and there's like a new whole set of food and stuff, and you can see the deer using it, but I don't have no more cameras. So, I mean, it's literally how I just started buying more and more, but I would find cameras on deals. I would just play the internet and go back and forth, or like go to Tractor Supply or like all these outdoor places. And every time I seen cameras on sale, I bought them. I mean, I would put money aside just to do that. And then, I mean, I would go like a lot of the online outdoor stores too. They run deals. Like if you buy five or more, they usually like knock them down $20 a piece instead of $25 a piece. I mean, I run cheaper cameras, but I mean, on public land, you always have that risk of somebody stealing them. And if the amount of cameras I run and they're all $100 a piece and somebody stole them, I would be kind of upset out there. But a $20, like that's a $20 bill, I can deal with it. Most of the time, I don't really get none of my stuff stolen. It's mostly people who have to clear my cards or steal the SD card out of them. And last year was the first time I've had trouble in a while, but I think it's because a lot of people are going mobile now more than they used to. So before, nobody was looking up. Nobody had a stick on them to be able to climb the tree to get them. But it literally was more of, I always wanted to have a span of cameras because I started to look for certain deer than just a couple deer in an area. And then also running this many cameras would help you learn an area when you're not there. Like there's a lot of cameras I run on during the season that I don't even go over there to hunt, but I know within that week period when all those bucks showed up on that camera, that's where I need to be.
And how many are you running total?
Well, right now I got 82 out, and then I have 20 in Indiana. And then the other, I would say probably 70 I have, I don't even have out right now. Just cause I've really like shrunk my areas down to where I don't need all those cameras out there all in one place. But I also use them as like going to new places I've never been. And I mean, if you can break it down on a map online and figure out where you know where the deer are going to be or cross, and then you go there, take cameras with you, even if you know you're not going to be able to hunt it this year, but you never know. And the next year you could have learned so much off that whole 3 week or 3 month season, basically, of running the camera there during the season and pulling them and knowing what's there and what's not.
And so when you're setting these cameras, where are you setting them, and kind of like why? Cause that's one of the things that like intrigues me, is I'm not a very good trail camera guy. I've got two out right now, and I own like three more. When I have one on a community scrape that's active all year long, and then I have one like on the edge of a bedding area where I know that there's a buck bedded in there, and I'm getting a couple deer here and there. But other than that, I would run them normally on like a travel route, just kind of like for inventory. But then I only, you know, deer, yeah, there's a deer trail, a game trail, but they may go meander and feed off over here and walk around it, you know? So you only get a certain amount. So how are you setting up these cameras, and why? Because I mean, I got all the faith in the world in you, that don't get me wrong, but if you have 82 like community scrapes over your areas or whatever, like I need to go where you're at. Like,
no, I don't really have that many, but like basically during the summertime, your biggest factor, like, I mean, you want to start like at the start of the year of how I use the cameras all the way down to like summertime, or do you want to just go right into how I plan them all out in the summertime?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's very unlikely I'm going to get to talk to anybody that has a trail camera regiment, anything like this. So for the entire year would be great.
Okay. Well, I really like putting out as many cameras as I can in January and February. And the biggest thing between winter and summer is a four-letter word, and it's food. That's really where it is, where it all is completely. I mean, if you could figure out what those deer are doing in the feed, and especially in the winter, and they're all yarded up, I mean, you'll have hundreds of pictures of deer. But a lot of the times, the reason why I run them through January to like basically March when they really drop is one, to know really when those deer have dropped so I can find their sheds, but also two, to see what bucks have made it through the year. Because some of those bucks that I seen over the summer and then they disappeared in the fall, they'll come back to that home range. And they might have only been 2 miles from there and I just never got onto them. But at least I know they're still alive and I can try to really figure out where they might have went during the season too. But then probably I would say mid-June, your biggest factors, I would go drive to your areas. Figure out what the farmers have planted, on the private and the public land, because I mean, a lot of the public land I hunt is planted though too. And then from there, probably early spring, when you're scouting, it's probably not early spring, but when everything's starting to bloom, you find all those apple trees too. I love running cameras over apple trees, especially if you get the summer apples. So they stay green and then they just fall off and then that's it. Those bucks, for some reason, that's the first place they will go. I would say just before they hit a food source, a big food source, a bean field or winter wheat, when it's growing, or regular wheat, actually, when it's still green, when it's first fresh too, they really like that. Because I mean, you don't really get the acorns until almost late August going into September. So, I mean, that's not really a factor in your summertime scouting as where you run your cameras, but I mainly run all my cameras close to food sources, especially if I knew or know where the bedding area is. But probably my all-time two favorite places are apple trees and then a little patch, a 1 acre patch of CRP next to a bean field. For some reason, those big bucks love that, and they love the fact that they can go to the beans and go lay in that tall grass. And I have so many pictures of so many big bucks that come and sit down, and there'd be four or five of them all together too, of just wow, just all together in one area in that little 1 acre CRP field, right? And they'll only be there all night, and then by 8 o'clock in the morning they'll go back to their main bedding area where they feel safe.
Interesting. So then what happens after you get through, that the summertime feeding and we're moving more towards say this time of the year into hunting season, how does that shift how you're using the cameras?
Well, when I go in the hunting season, basically so everybody can put cameras out September 1st, or not cameras, but you can put your tree stands out September 1st, or you're legally allowed to September 1st on public land here in Michigan. So I usually try to pull most of my cameras just before then, the last couple of days of August. And then there's cameras that I feel safe enough that I will leave till almost October and then pull them, just for the fact that I know nobody's going to see them. But I mean, if you really think about it, less theft or people looking at your cameras and seeing what's on your SD cards is try to pull them just before that and then wait a couple weeks when a lot of people get in and out of the woods. But mainly my fall, I mean, you still drive around and look what the crops are doing, because starting in October, a lot of those deer will hit acorns and then they'll go hit corn all night and pick corn right off the field. Because there's two bucks I shot in early October and I cut their stomach open and both of them were full of corn, and that cornfield wasn't any closer than a mile away. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But my cameras, I'll mainly run closer to the bedding areas. And most of the time, by then you should be able to find scrapes. I mean, where they're opening up. And if you really want to know what's in that area, if you know where the two big primary bedding areas are and there's a whole line of scrapes, you might only get night photos if it's kind of far away. But I try to get them as close as I can. And then when I go and hunt in October, I'll actually pull a camera and sit there and look at it in the tree stand while I wait for the deer to stand up and come to me.
Okay. So I guess from that perspective, you know, so you said that you killed some bucks early in October, and that you're pulling a camera on your way in. What is your strategy then? How are you using the information that you're getting? So,
well, I mean, like it could be almost anything. Like, is the fact that like it could be like every 3 days on a certain wind that buck's in there using that bedding area. Like if it's a buck that you're looking for, because the one buck I shot 2 years ago in the early season, I actually watched him in that bedding area with like five other shooters all summer long. So I was okay with shooting any of them. But I would say, I want to say like September 17th, I had pictures of him when he turned from velvet to hardhorn. It was earlier than that when he shed his velvet, but he still was using that bedding area, but he was only using it on a west wind. So I shot that deer on October 3rd and it was on a west wind. And that was the only time that deer would come and use that bedding area. And when it took 3 days in the season for us to get a west wind, I went over there and set up, and I was 50 yards off the road, and that deer was only bedded 45 yards from me. And then he stood up and come right to me, and I shot him at 17 yards. So, but I knew he was there. Just the fact that, like, if you can look up wind data and compare it to like the times, like in later September after those deer do that shift of like some of the deer will stay in that home range and then some of them won't. But like a lot of people think they all just move away, and most of them don't. They stay within that like mile or 2 mile range. So you still always have a chance, even if it is a really big one or not. It doesn't matter. They don't really go too far. It's only during like, I would say the rut when they're really searching for does, they can end up 10 miles away.
And so is there a particular like setup that you prefer like hunting? Because I think you killed your deer last year from the ground. The one you just said there, you know, you were right near the road. Or are you just saying, this is where I need to be regardless? So the deer is going to be here. I need to be here. And if I can't get in a tree, if I'm going to have to be on the ground, if I'm going to be 30 feet up, because those are questions I think that, you know, a lot of guys that are trying to make this transition to start to shoot bigger bucks or try to shoot a specific buck, you end up with, you know, almost like, I don't know, they'll say like, oh, well, it just wasn't right. That deer is unkillable, or, you know, whatever.
I wouldn't say every deer is unkillable. But it just matters the fact of knowing what you know of being able to kill that deer. If that like kind of makes sense. Like I would say probably in the last 3 years, I've had a picture of one that I only got nighttime photos of. But I think this year I finally figured out where that deer hides and moves within like that daylight time, I would say, that you would be able to get a shot. And I mean, he's just an absolute slob too. But I've only had nighttime photos, and within like a 3 mile like radius too, which is weird. And you travel during the rut like that, but using the cameras and knowing like what those deer are doing when you're not there helps, but also it could hinder you too, as the fact of you could be too late. But like my biggest factor of using the cameras to really kill a deer in like September, like not September, but in October, but use it in September, is figuring out why they're there during that time period, as of like the wind mostly. So like every time you had like a west or north wind, that's why that deer's bedded there, because he feels security of getting up and not being harmed. And it's adjacent to food.
So are you targeting like a specific bed, or are you saying these deer bed here? And
yeah, it's not really a specific bed. It's just a specific primary bedding area. So there could be multiple deer in that bedding area. But I mean, most of the time when I'm hunting those multiple like bedding areas like that, it's I'll have four or five does stand up first, and then they'll get up. And that night that I shot that buck a couple years ago, I had four or five does get up, but they come out the backside of the bedding area, and I thought I actually screwed myself over, but I stayed there, and thank God I did, because that one, he got up and come right to me. But he was doing something totally different, and when I went in there, actually, after, because when I shot him, he ran right back to his bed and almost made it there, and he actually got caught up in this pine tree, but that whole entire side was shredded. I mean, he had everything rubbed out and tore up, and that's what they were doing, is I think they were marking all their sign before they went to the cornfield that was actually across the road where all those does went to the burnt off beans that were like to the north of me instead.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's good to hear, because I think, you know, there's so much emphasis put on buck bedding and buck beds and specific,
I mean,
single
truthfully,
beds, you know?
If you don't use a camera, but you know exactly what a buck track looks like, and like if you spend enough time out there and you're after like one or two certain deer, you can really figure out what their track looks like. It might take you a couple years to really figure something out like that. So like if anybody listens to this as like getting frustrated towards that stuff, I mean, you're not going to be able to spot his track right off the bat, but like the one deer I'm after this year, he's got like 1 foot that's bigger than the left. It's weird. I mean, I don't know why he does, but that's how I know he's there and how his bedding area is, because like I have an actual cell cam back there right now, and he turns around and he'll look at the cell cam and run. So I only get blurry camera pictures of him. But the only pictures I have of him that are really good is he was with three or four other deer. So I think he felt more comfortable around them in his bachelor group being by that camera, because I don't know what the cameras make as noise, but like it just one of those things that just really knowing where the deer want to be as like primary bedding areas, so they all feel comfortable. Because Michigan, we're hunting super pressured deer. All it takes is one dude with a 22 to go squirrel hunt and walk through something and completely destroy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, but what I was going to say is like, there's so much emphasis put on a single bed, you know, when you watch, you know, a lot of the Dan Infault stuff, when it's all, you know, points or, you know, on this island, and, you know, a lot of guys can't find that, or, you know, they don't have that where they're at.
And well, like, so, I think like with the single bed stuff, that really should only come in the factor is when you put a visual on that deer and you see him the night before and you're just not close enough, but you know that he's there and he's sitting in that single bed. If he's sitting there in that single bed, that next night you move closer and kill that deer. You don't like wait around. You can't just, you got to be aggressive. That's like, I have a buddy in the last couple of years, he's super into mobile hunting, but he was just really bad at being aggressive. He always wanted to stay on the outskirts, and I keep like pushing him harder and harder. I'm like, dude, you need to like get in there and get in there with those deer. I mean, if you know you can sneak in there quiet enough and set up quiet enough, there's no reason why you can't get anywhere from 30 yards to 70 yards from a killer. From a killer spot, basically, to kill that deer, especially if that night before on that single bed, you see him get up from that single bed and he walks a certain way, he's going to do that same thing the next night, especially if he feels comfortable there and the wind doesn't do some like crazy amount of crap too.
Mm-hmm. But I think like from the primary bedding area standpoint is like, I don't think enough people talk about that, because I know where, you know, I would translate this, I think, to most guys, they could tell you like there's going to be deer bedded in there. And I think that goes back to like that progression where you said, you know, you were killing deer, you know, before all of this. And so I think, again, with whether it's gear or, you know, information overload, you know, it can be so much, it can be overwhelming, and you're like, well, I can't find a buck bed, so I'm never going to kill a buck, you know?
Which, I mean, technically, I mean, you don't have to have a buck bed to kill a buck, and that's where a lot of people don't, like, what is the word for it? Like, basically think it through. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a buck bed to kill a buck, because, I mean, there's been so many times I've been out there that I have watched bucks chase does in front of me for hours, and then they bed 60 yards from me and lay down right there. and they're laying down right there just because they're tired, and they feel safe there because they don't know they're actually being watched. But I mean, a deer almost get bed literally anywhere as long as they feel safe there, and they know there's no intrusion.
So, without like too much information or whatever, I'm interested to know, and I think the listener would be too. You know, so you are only getting nighttime pictures of the big buck that you're chasing. And you said you think you've got it figured out. Like, is that from like backtracking tracks or process of elimination? Put a camera here, 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 here. Well, if he's not any of those places, but he's moving through them, he's got to be over here. Or how did you come to the conclusion of where he's at now?
Well, there's actually two different big bucks I mentioned there, but the one that is only nighttime photos was a lot of backtracking. And really backtracking the deer, like I would say, like tracks, and like especially knowing the area that I've walked like a lot of it, but I never thought about like this little chunk over here off to the side. And I think that's like where he's hiding at most of the time, because it would make sense of where I would get him on nighttime photos, like closer to dark over in this one spot, and then it'd be 3 a.m. in the other spot. But if you think about it, he just did one giant full circle too. If you like put it out on your computer and blew it all up and you really looked at it and thought about it, there's only so many places he really could hide besides like going over to private, which there's always that chance of him being over there. But I also feel the need of, after looking at this little chunk that's off to the side, that he's there during that time frame. Because of one, it's safety, it's super thick, and the big buck sign's in there, and you can't just see it from the road. You have to actually walk right in there and like start digging around. But a lot of it is just backtracking of like where I got him on camera over here, and then where I got him over here at a certain time, a mile away. And that deer literally every night would work a big mile circle. And I think he just not only chased does, but he was working every like big community scrape he could that night, because that's where I would get pictures of him, is over these big community scrapes that like five or six bucks would use it. And I think he was really associating himself as a dominant deer between like two or three different like social groups of bucks, because the one big community scrape, it'd be a whole group of bucks, but then him, and then a mile away down the road, same thing, bunch of different groups of bucks, and then him. And I think it was just because he was a dominant deer, but in that little like section off the side too, has a lot of doe bedding in it. And I don't think he had to get up during daylight to go chase does, because they all came to him because he was the most mature deer in that area. That's where a lot of people don't look at, as the fact that like here, because we have a lot more does than we do bucks, the most mature deer is not going to have to go very far to mate.
Okay. So, you know, I have to imagine that you're chasing, you know, multiple deer. You know, we just talked with Jake Bush, and he says, you know, he's looking for, you know, world-class whitetails on public in Ohio, and he's got like a top five deer. You know, those are the ones that he's really targeting. How does your season go? Because it would seem like with that amount of information and the amount of like time that you spend in the woods, the amount of days that you spend hunting, it would seem like any day with a certain wind, you would have a chance to kill a buck. Now, maybe it's not one of the top five or whatever. But so how does your season go? How do you prioritize your hunting season, given the amount of opportunities and time in the field?
Well, from, I would say probably from 5 years ago till now, 5 years ago, I just hunted one multiple primary bedding area every night until I came and closed and shoot one of the bucks I've had on camera or that I've never seen before. Till now, I'm breaking it down to two or three certain areas that I know that hold a lot of big bucks or a lot of good deer to shoot. But in those areas, there's only maybe one or two that I would shoot in that area unless you get a bonus that comes out of nowhere and he's just as big as the two that I would shoot. If that helps. I mean, it's kind of hard to really single it down, but like in the past, I've that's the thing with trail cameras that I hate the most is that you have so many pictures of good deer or deer that you would like to have as a trophy in your house or whatever, but you really need to single down just a few and know that they live in these areas and they'll shift to these areas and know where to go after them. And you stay there until you get a visual and you kill that deer. Because last year, my biggest fault was is that I was trying to chase too many bucks at once. And I did kill a nice one, but it's still the fact that like it was a bonus deer that was completely off the radar and I got lucky. And there was one deer that I went back and forth with in a chess match last year that literally kicked my ass. And he would probably go in the 150s as a 10 pointer. And I wanted that deer so bad that he's the whole entire reason why I left Indiana when Jason was down there to come back to kill him, because he showed up on my cell cam. So it was starting to get in the factor that I was really singling it down. But from running so many cameras, I basically run so many cameras now just to try to find the biggest deer I could find. Until I find the biggest deer I could find, then in that certain area that he lives, I will bombard it with at least 5 to 10 cameras and really like break down what he's doing at almost every single day.
Okay. So just for clarification, you know, we're talking about Michigan deer. You know, Michigan always gets a bad rap, you know, from us and everywhere else, but being, you know, $2, not real great on the management side compared to, you know, some of the other states that are around us, Indiana, Ohio, you know, Wisconsin, all of that. So what is the class of bucks that you're chasing, and what is their, like, their age structure?
I personally try to kill anything that's 4.5 and older now, because I mean, back in the day, I've killed multiple 2.5-year-olds and 3.5-year-olds. And now I'm like really trying to up my game. But in the last 4 years, the youngest deer I've killed was 4.5. So I'm trying to stay within that or older. And a mature deer, I mean, the only way I think I could kill a young deer now here is that he's pushing at least Pope and Young or bigger, okay. Which I mean, it doesn't come across all the time. There's actually, I would say from when I was a kid till now, there's probably more deer over 100 inches than a lot of people would give Michigan credit for, because there's more and more people now that are getting a little bit more selective on trying to push towards having a better herd as quality of deer. But I mainly trying to shoot now probably the biggest buck I could find besides that.
And what are they in inches, would you say?
I would say probably anywhere from like 130 to pushing the 180 plus sign.
Okay. Yeah. You were telling me about one that got killed last year that you were, it was last year, right? That you were chasing.
No, it was, I would say it was probably almost 3 years ago now. And that deer, I filmed him all summer long, had trail cam pictures of him. And I mean, I come close to really figuring out his routine. And even when he shifted in September, he didn't go anywhere, but he was hiding between public and private, and some kids shot him in the youth hunt. And that deer scored, I think like 187 or something like would change a little bit right there, but he was a monster.
Now, when you say that you hate, that's what you hate about the trail cams, is that you are seeing so many bucks. And then you talk about like when you were younger and the hunting being like such a wholesome, like family thing. Like, so for myself, like I didn't grow up chasing big bucks. We never killed any big bucks. You know, that wasn't any part of it. And so now, even without the trail cameras, you know, I look at deer and I just think about like, would I be happy shooting this deer, you know, but I don't have like a catalog of trail cam pictures that says, well, what if this one's next? Or what if this one, how does that make you feel? Like I say, like, you know, you've talked a lot about like hunting with your grandfather and like the family aspect. Do you think it takes like some of the fun out of it, or is that like, it's just like a new goal?
I would say it's more of, as I've progressed as a hunter, that I want to always constantly try to kill like the biggest buck I can find. But I mean, truthfully, like, this is something me and Jason have talked about too multiple times, but the factor of that, even if it's 110 inch deer or 200 inch deer that come in and he come in and got me all fired up, I'm probably going to kill him, because that's all that really matters. You're out there to have fun. I mean, nobody's paying you to, like, you have to kill this deer or not. I mean, it is cool that you kill your target deer, but I mean, I hunt with a lot of people that are my friends, that are my close friends, that the biggest buck they might have killed is a 6-pointer. And if I take them out hunting and we see a decent 8-pointer, like one of my buddies 3 years ago, biggest buck he's ever killed, he killed with me. And it just, that's all that matters to me. If it gets you fired up, I mean, he almost threw up in the stand that he got so much adrenaline and rush from it. So, I mean, he was shaking. He like told me that he needed to get down, and I'm like, just sit down and take a deep breath. But I mean, you're out there to have fun. If you're not having fun, then why are you doing it? Or if you're out there and you're killing deer and you don't get that adrenaline rush, why are you out there to do it? It's cheaper to go to the grocery store and buy meat, or easier at least.
Yeah. No, I just curious, like I said, because, you know, for you to say that, you know, there are so many big bucks, and, you know, I mean, for the listeners, like, I'll post up some pictures and you can, I'll link all of his Instagram and stuff, but like, you won't believe the amount of bucks and bucks together and big bucks, you know, what I would consider, you know, for Michigan, but, you know, a lot of them are like for anywhere, that you're finding. So I don't know, I guess like the hunter in me, the person in me, you know, I think, well, you know, that's why I'm asking the questions as I am, is like, you know, if I had pictures of all of these bucks, you can better believe that I'd be, you know, I'd be out there, but I don't think I could wait for the next one. You know, I'm very much a bird in the hand versus.
Well, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, eventually everybody's got to grow as a hunter in their own way. If you spend the rest of your life killing 100 inch deer, that is awesome. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's whatever you see in your own eyes is what you want to do. And that's where a lot of people go wrong in this world, is that, like, if you ain't killing deer that are over 150 inch plus, you don't know what you're doing. That doesn't mean you don't know what you're doing. It means you're actually out there having fun. And I mean, that's what it really matters to. There's like two ways you hunt. You go out there just to like have your time to yourself, and you go out there to have fun. And that's why I hunt. Like, that's why I hunt deer and shoot ducks and geese. And I used to trap. And then, I mean, I fish a whole ton, because I mean, I'm out there enjoying what we can, because it's the resources that we pay for.
Now, that's another one of the things I wanted to ask you about with trapping. You know, I heard Troy Pottinger talk about, that's the way that he sets up like his mock scrapes, and he has the deer like come to him and everything like that. With your history, like trapping, do you think that that helps you to like see the woods differently, or try and figure out movement differently than maybe somebody who has never tried to lure something in like that?
Yeah, I would say it gives you like a little bit more woodsmanship than most people can go out there to do. Because like trying to get a coyote to step in your trap that is only 5 inches like big is a lot. And you only get one chance at them most of the time too when you trap. Because once you miss them, they won't ever come back to that setup. But the woodsmanship style towards it, and knowing like what an animal wants to do, it's quite impressive. Even just going out there and watching them and see what they do and spend hours just watching like deer or wildlife, period, is like in itself, it's like a teacher trying to tell you what to do.
Okay, so it's more of just like a watch this, and that's how it's going to be the next time. So you just have to insert yourself in there
Yeah.
and figure that out. Like so.
I mean, like every animal's different, but like with trapping, like, I mean, you don't go trap muskrats in the middle of an acorn flat. I mean, you go trap them in usually a cattail swamp that has water that runs through it, or a backed up like pond that has their huts and stuff. I mean, they live there, they feed there. That's where they want to be. That's where they feel safe. And then, I mean, you could put that into like deer. I mean, deer feel safe in this thicket. They feed close by. I mean, and there's only so many ways ins and out that they're gonna come in and out. You just got to figure out the exact way that they use their area to come between bedding and food.
So from your standpoint, saying sitting and watching, and there the animal's going to be the teacher.
Yeah.
What have you learned from all of these cameras that will help out the new hunter or the guy that's trying to get on bucks for the first time, or maybe he's got his first trail camera.
I would say basically like that's actually a pretty hard question, besides not getting like too in depth on as like my October-ish into November. Like, even if it's a feeding area that they put their camera over, or it's like a bunch of scrapes, or you know there's like a scrape that always opens up, but it doesn't open up till like the middle of October. That scrape will tell you that week period with that camera for the first 5 days, or that like it could be a 2 week period that all those bucks are there, because that's they're there to breed those does.
Well, and that's something that I had heard a lot of other people talk about, and I had I thought, well, that would be nice if I knew when the deer were using this. Or they say, it's only a couple of days a year that there's bucks in this area. But in the I the way that I talk about trail cameras is I feel like people are using trail cameras like you are, or that are using them like at a higher level, where they are looking at it, and they're not necessarily looking at it for, like, your cameras don't necessarily have to be for this season. You're just
No.
looking at them for the deer movement, the time, the wind. You're basically saying the why. And
Yeah.
then there's other people that are like, I feel like, trail camera enthusiasts. Like, they just want to get pictures of bucks. Everybody likes seeing pictures of bucks, but they're not, everybody has been through, some public land area where there's a ladder stand, and then either hooked right onto the tree that's there, or 10 yards out in front of it is a trail camera. And it's like, I wouldn't imagine that guy's getting very many pictures, but he just wants to see something on his camera so he can go and hunt there. But it's never gonna work out, And in my short run, like, there's a property where my wife keeps her horse just down the road, and my wife's birthday is November 8th. Every year, within like 4 days of her birthday, there's one big buck on camera. And like, big for this area, a deer that, never seen before, any of that. And then, when you talk about a scrape area like that, last year I found a scrape in August, put a camera on it, let it run all year, came and picked it up. October 23rd to the 25th, there was multiple bucks on it every single day. And so now I'm just thinking that's where I need to be during that time.
The thing about having that scrape area with that multiple bucks on it is just knowing what like bedding areas are completely using, because it might be multiple bedding areas that they're using. And that's really where you got to single it down. Like, well, the one buck you want to kill off that camera, like, is he going to be here or is he going to be in the other two? And knowing what time he comes or what, like, what the wind's doing, because the wind could really tell you where that mature deer is going to be. Because that's the safest point of contact that he feels safe there, and he thinks he's got it bulletproof. I mean, like, truthfully, there's so many uses for trail cameras these days that it makes it hard. And I mean, your everyday, like, weekend hunter, everybody, yeah, like, you're right. Everybody wants a ton of pictures of bucks, and, like, that's the fascinating part about it. But I mean, are you actually using the camera to do that, or are you actually using the camera as informational of trying to, like, figure out what those deer are doing? Because you can, truthfully, you can use these cameras to really hunt for you, and you don't have to do that much.
One thing that we didn't talk about, and I don't want to be on here, you know, too long for you. I know you got to probably work tonight, but.
No, I'm good. Tonight I have off for the first time in 2 weeks, so.
Okay, good. But with that many cameras, how are you checking them? How often are you checking them? And how much thought are you putting into, like, the entrance and exit of dealing with all of these cameras?
Well, like, my summertime cameras, I really don't care too much, besides I'll go check them, like, once every 2 months. And I mean, like, you've probably seen on my Instagram, my dog. I take my dog everywhere with me. And I actually use my dog to my advantage, because, like, a lot of the deer, they're so used to people. I mean, they tolerate it, and they tolerate people with dogs, because there's actually a lot of beagle hunters in my area, and there's a lot of people that, like, bird hunt and duck hunt and stuff. I think my dog during the summer, a lot of the times, helped me, like, check the camera, and the deer just wave it off like it's nothing. Because I went out there by myself, and you could tell on the camera, like, those first 5 days, those deer got all weirded out. But when I went out there with my dog, the first 5 days, they didn't even care. It was like, it was nothing. It was just like, I was just some nature walker out there walking with his dog. Like, they associated the two together. I mean, it's kind of weird to say that, but it's just something that I've noticed. But if I was anybody, I wouldn't go check your camera, like, every week. That's where you fault out, and you're getting those deer to pattern you, and you won't get them on your camera anymore either. But during the season, it's basically wind based, or I'll go check the camera and hunt it at the same time.
And so when you're hunting, I guess, what is your setup for your equipment? Are you hunting from a saddle? Are you hunting hybrid? Are you doing hang and hunt presets?
Well, I mainly hang and hunt, and then I'll hunt off the ground, because there's a lot of areas that it's all marsh and there's no trees to hunt and hunt out of. And if there is a tree, you look like a giant lollipop in the middle of the marsh, and the deer notice that. You're just trying to single down, like, they have multiple trails, but there's a certain trail that those bucks will only use most of the time. And that's mostly the downwind side of primary, like, doe bedding areas or deer bedding areas that those bucks will come down, because then they don't have to go into that bedding area to check for hot doe. They can just come down the downwind side and scent check it and keep moving on.
And so when you're hunting from the ground, what are you using for a seat? Or are you just standing, kneeling? What do you do?
I got one of those little, like, Meyer fold-out chairs. And then I sit down, and, like, I have, like, because I duck hunt, I got a lot of cattail camo. I'll wear cattail camo so you don't stick out like a sore thumb. I try to match my surroundings, but, like, when I hunt out of a tree, I'm out there in, like, Carhartt pants and a flannel or whatever. I mean, pretty much, as long as it's not real bright colors, just real dark, solid colors.
And have you found that to be, you know, have you been picked off? I mean, do you think that it makes a difference, or do you think that you're just in there in such, like, a, you know, kind of like a bulletproof setup, like, where you're saying, okay, well, I know the deer are here, and I know that there's no way they're going to see me before I can kill them, or what?
Basically, it's a lot of that. They ain't going to see me until it's already too late. And if most of the time, like, if you don't move and make fast movements, and you stick yourself to the tree, like, That was my buddy that shot that buck a couple years ago. That was the biggest buck he ever killed. When we were like, it's like real thick cover next to an oak flat full of stinging nettle. And that's why those deer were there, because we didn't have any acorns that year. But they were just mowing that stinging nettle. And when they were mowing that, they'd work this big scrape right on the edge of the brush. But they'd come out of the marsh, work that brush, because they felt safe through all that brush and undergrowth, that they come work that scrape. And that's what that deer did. I filmed him actually working that scrape and come to us. But we were in such an open spot. My buddy kept coming off the tree, and there was multiple times I actually like told him to take a deep breath, and I grabbed him and pushed him against the tree. And you want to like melt into the tree, basically, like you're attached to it. And a lot of the times, if you ain't moving, they might look your way, but they're not looking at you. If that makes like any sense, they're just looking and scanning the area to see if they could catch any movement before they keep moving on. And that buck actually, he worked that scrape and he come right to us, and he was eating stinging nettle right in front of us before he shot him. But it was kind of funny. And I mean, I'll admit to it, because I am human. 2 hours later, I missed probably one of the biggest bucks I've ever had a crack at. And that deer didn't care about feeding anything. He was with a doe and he was locked down, and he was going anywhere she was going. And we were actually sitting there in a daze, and that deer roared at her, and that's how we heard him. And I turned right around, and my buddy's like, "What in the world was that?" And I'm like, "Big buck, don't move."
And he didn't care what color you were wearing, right?
No, it didn't matter at all. I mean, he didn't. I mean, every deer is different, though. Like, I shot a doe 2 years ago that she was with a button buck fawn. And I think it was her fawn from over the summer. And he come and he was underneath my tree, and he was just doing whatever. He smelled my steps. I mean, he didn't care. He didn't know the fear in it. But she come and she like looked right at me and looked right up, and she was like, "I don't know about that." And then she like turned right around, and when she turned around, that's when I drew back, and she jumped over this like bush to try to get away, and that's when I ended up shooting her when she stopped on the other side of that bush. But I mean, every deer is different. Some are trained to start looking in the trees because they've been shot at. And some, they don't even pay attention to it at all. They have something on their mind that they're on a mission.
So that's crazy, because you think of like the $500 or $600 Sitka jacket and all of this stuff that's being, pushed at you. And it is
nice, because a lot of that stuff keeps you dry and warm. And I mean, there's been multiple times I have froze my ass off out there. But truthfully, it doesn't all matter. As long as you're wearing, I would say, a dark color, and you learn to blend in, or like picking the right tree is probably the hardest thing to do. But if you can pick a tree that has another tree next to it, you're mainly golden, because it just helps break your silhouette of your body.
I think about that often also. How many times have you been sitting in a tree? Well, maybe not where you hunt, but, I can think of multiple times, and a lot of times, like when I'm out of state, but I'll be sitting somewhere and you'll have somebody walk right underneath you or whatever. And like, your fletchings are bright colored, you got stuff hanging there,
And they don't even notice.
They have no idea.
Nope. I've had guys walk right by me, and I've had to whistle at them because they were about to walk into the bedding area where all those deer were supposed to go. Like Ohio was a perfect example. I would say I went and hunted opening day of Ohio, and I mean, I might as well just tell the whole story, but I went down there and I found the same exact tree I hunted 2 years before somehow in the dark. I couldn't tell you how. I didn't even use like my mapping system or nothing. I just walked and knew there was this ridge line, and those deer would like run that ridge line. And actually that morning I had this raccoon at first light come underneath me, and I was sitting there and I'm like, "Oh, whatever." And then I heard something more, and I thought it was a raccoon again. I looked down and it was a nice 8-pointer, and he was right underneath me and my climber. And this was back in my climber days, and I couldn't shoot him because I couldn't shoot him around the climber, because he was directly right underneath me. And then when he moseyed off in like my blind spot with the climber. And that's why I didn't like using the climber, because of the blind spot. But fast forward to like 2.5 more weeks later, we came like pre-rut down there, and I was sitting there and I had two guys walking on me. One dude was in full camo and he had blue jeans on and a painted face, and he was walking around with a crossbow, and he didn't see me. I just let him go by, but he wasn't going where the deer were. And then an hour later, I had some dude with a regular bow walking around with camo pants on, and he had a Columbia jacket. and I don't know what they were doing, but like 20 minutes after that guy left and I whistled at him because he was going towards those deer, all those deer started piling out, and I shot a goofy looking rack deer that come right to me and had no idea was there until he come 20 yards from me. He looked right at me and he was already too late. But he came from like 150 yards. And I told myself that if he comes all the way over here, I'm going to shoot him. And he did.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is like, how does it, the standards and, or like the hunts go, when you're out of state? Cause it sounds like, you know, just for, you know, a decent 8-pointer or whatever, you know, in Michigan, that might be, you know, 100 inches or whatever, but in Ohio, it could be, you know, 130 easy.
Yeah. Well, in Ohio, me and Ohio have had our little hearts and misses. Let's put it that way. That state haunts me. And for some reason, I don't know why, but I have shot that's the only state that I went out of state and I've drawn back on a deer besides Minnesota. And I've hunted Indiana multiple times and I've yet to draw back on one because I know what's there. But in Ohio, I never ran cameras down there. So it was like the first Pope and Young deer that I was able to shoot, really. And I have missed multiple real big deer down there. I don't know what it is. There's something that haunts me. And one of these days, I'm going to go down there and break that curse I got, best way to say it. Because like I shot it up, I would say a deer would probably score over 150. And I shot at him at 35 yards and I don't even know how I missed that deer. And I think I grazed underneath his chest because there was hair, but I never hit him like lethal. And then not that year, but the year after I went down there, but I went to Southern Ohio instead of the Northern part where I usually hunt. And I had that deer probably been in like the 140s and a little buck come up and got him up. I drew back and ranged him from one third out. He was and the second tier elevation in the mountains down there. And I was up above them. And somehow I snuck in there and walked around the mountain, come down over, and I spotted him sitting there in his bed right on the edge of the mountain. It was like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I watched him for a while, and that little buck got him up. When he got him up, I ranged him, and he was like 39 or 40 yards away. And I don't try to shoot anything under 40. That's what I'm really comfortable with. And I mean, shoot over 40, I should say. And I drew back and I shot and I thought I actually smoked that deer. And what there was a dead log that was straight up and down that was any bigger than a baseball bat that blended into how dark his coat was. And that's what I shot instead of him. You want to talk about being pissed? I couldn't believe it. And I thought I smoked that deer because he like ran off like I hit him and I got all excited and I went down there and I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Man, that's how it goes sometimes. That's the worst, like out of state. And just think of how cool it, like everything was up until that point, you know?
Well, the cool part is that me and Jason were in camp together and he would have been just as excited as I was if I would have killed that deer. And it would have just been a thrill. And it just, I never hunted the mountains down there and he did it like, I think once or twice before me. And I found out more of the deer were staying away from the hardwood ridges where everybody would come down and hunt during the rut. And we're more in like the brush country down there. And that's what I figured out. But then after that, I never been back. I just cut my losses for a while. And that's why I've been hunting Indiana because it's so close for me to drive down. I could drive down there like a lot of people come out my way from the city is the same amount of time.
Yeah.
But down in Indiana, I've had chances to kill like Pope and Young deer. But from what I've seen and what I've had on camera down there and what I filmed over the summer, I shouldn't kill anything less than 140 down there.
That's cool.
And I mean, you've seen the deer that Jason killed last year and they're there. And that's what's great about it.
Yeah, my buddy, he just come up with one last year that was like, it was just under 170.
Yeah. And I mean, Indiana's a pretty sleeper state. It's starting to get more and more popular now. But the big deer are there. I mean, I hate to really say that, and I hope it don't hurt me, but they're there.
Now, you said you moved from a climber to, like you said, a lone wolf. Is that what you're still hunting with, is like a lone wolf?
Yes, I'm still hunting with I'm hunting with the custom gear stuff now.
Okay. And what sticks are you using?
The lone wolf mini sticks with the aiders.
Okay. So not the double steps. You still just run the singles.
Just the singles. I like how they stack better on the stand. And I could be a lot more organized with them that way. Because, I mean, I'm taking my camera stuff out there with me now. And, I mean, in the last 5 years, I've really got into, like, filming a lot more. I like, enjoy going and looking back, especially during the summer. I really like looking at all the bucks I film. And, I mean, I'll stop in the middle of the road and pull right over. I don't care if there's traffic or people, and film a big buck that's on public. Because I don't film anything that I can't hunt. That's the best way to say it.
I really enjoy it. I was going back through and looking at the stuff from last year, trying to put something together. And I was like, man, you know, in the moment you think, like, even not like bucks or whatever, but I just think like, oh, you know, I had some does or this spike or this, you know, whatever. But then, like, as I'm going through, looking through all these files, it's like, man, we saw a lot of deer last year. Like, you know.
And I mean, that's, I think just even seeing deer, like, coming for somebody, for a new hunter, just seeing deer is just confidence right there. Even if you didn't get a shot at them, just even seeing them and watching where they're coming, watch where they come from, watch what they're doing, even if it is a spike, because it could be a spike and then you move over there the next night and a big 8-pointer come right out and you get a shot at them.
I can tell you that my through doing this podcast, you know, obviously I get to talk to, you know, tons of great hunters, guys that do things way differently than I've ever been taught, than I've ever seen, that I've even like started to think of. And that for me has been like building that confidence. Like last year, you know, I almost tagged out last year. I was at full draw and a really nice buck. And, but that was 3 days in the making, 'cause I just kept moving closer and closer to where I saw the deer. You know, and then finally I made the, you know, the correct decision to be, you know, where I thought it needed to be, you know.
And I mean, that's because you got aggressive. And that's where I know a lot of new hunters, a lot of new mobile hunters too, they're too scared to get aggressive. So what if you fail? If you fail, you learn something. And I mean, I failed more times than you can ever believe. Like last year, I was after a really big 8-pointer. And that deer would probably score in the 130s here in Michigan. And I actually kicked him out of his bed because I finally figured out where they were all coming from completely. I bumped him. He got up. He did one big circle around me, and I actually almost got a shot at him at 45 yards. I was like going back and forth in my head, like, do I do it or do I not? And he's already on pins and needles, so I just passed him. And then he worked a scrape right in front of me and crossed the road, and somebody smoked him with a car right in front of me.
Oh, my God.
But I learned something that I knew that that's where those deer are going to be. And they're going to do that every single year now. Because on that camera that was adjacent to there, I had 5 shooters in a week span right there. And I couldn't figure out which way they were coming from. And it's starting to aggravate me a lot because knowing the area. And I'm like, there's no way that all 5 of those shooters are sitting in that one bedding area and I'm not seeing a one. But I'd see 15 does every single night.
Yeah, I think like you said, like just seeing deer, but you know, and you said about being aggressive. Like, I think that those are the two like Achilles heels, like of a lot of hunters is like, maybe it's not even that they don't know that they want to be aggressive or that they're not being aggressive.
Yeah.
But it's just like getting the trail cam pictures that people want to see deer. And I can tell you this, like, you know, more than likely the way that you grew up hunting with the UP style bait pile hunting was the same as I did. And so if those deer walked by and they didn't come to the bait, then
you never see them.
Or you could see them. I mean, we used to sit and look through the cedar swamps and you'd see like the silhouettes go by. but they never came over to us. But we had our spots. We had our shacks. We had our area that we just went
to. Same here, too. And then you sat in that area. And, I mean, the area I hunted in the UP when I was younger, I didn't see very many deer. But when I did, it was always a good one. And I always got a shot. And most of the time, I say 3 out of 5, they were with a doe. And that's what killed them. And she wanted to come eat. And that was before I knew what I was doing, really, at all. And I wouldn't say I even knew what I was doing now. I'm just putting myself and using what's in between my ears to know where the deer are going to want to be.
But what I'm saying is, when I would see those silhouettes and those deer out there, and they walked by, I never thought to move over there.
Yeah.
Because this was my spot and this was my bait. So maybe the ones behind will want to come and eat. You know?
Yeah.
And so I think that seeing deer, you think, well, you hope that they come over to you, you know, oh, well, maybe the next ones will come by. Like when you talk about Ohio, like, you know, granted I killed a good one in Ohio, but the year prior to that, I had 5 bucks jump this creek 50 yards in front of me at about a half hour interval. And if I would have just got down and moved 50 yards, they'd have been running right there. Yeah. But it never crossed my mind ever.
And I mean, that's like the biggest fault too, is that I think a lot of people put, or especially new hunters, in the hope. And I mean, you got to have some kind of hope to go out there because it's confidence, but you can't just put your whole entire game in the hope. You want to be in the game. You got to like move, especially if you're a mobile hunter, there's no reason why you can't move and get closer.
And that's what I mean. That's what I've learned, you know, over this process. And, you know, when I think back on people that I know that have killed big deer, or people that have done things, you know, they're moving all around, like even in the same day. Like if they'll set up and they're like, oh, well, the deer are over there, so I'm got down and I moved over there, would have been never in a million years would I have thought to do that. And now it's just like, should I move yet or wait a couple minutes, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, some of the older guys that I've known that have killed a lot of nice bucks, that was one of the biggest factors that I've learned from them, is don't be scared to get down and move. Because some of them actually have just moved that same day within the hour and killed that same buck they seen 2 hours before. That came right back through on the same exact trail that he just did.
Well, when you think about it, he was safe there the first time.
Yeah. You know? Why would he not come back that way?
Right.
He might have just went to this other little area and checked those, and then he was like, oh, well, none of them are in heat, and said, screw it, and come right back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that gets missed when you're, like I said, there's so much information out there, and there's so many things that, you know, guys should focus on, and they're not having fun. They're not.
Well, when you start getting stressed out about it, that's when you're not having any fun.
Right.
And I think that's where one of the biggest factors that I got over the fact is that I just take my gut feeling of what I want to do. Because like I knew like if you take 3 bedding areas and they're close together and you only got 3 options, I just take my gut feeling about it now. Unless I see him and he goes right there, obviously I'm going to go there. But
so given that, before we round this out here, what do you think? So if you were taking one of your buddies that was a new hunter, you know, killed a couple deer, but never killed a buck, with all the information that you've gathered from all the trail cams, from all the trends, from all of the everything, you know, where would you say this is where you need to be to kill any buck?
I would basically send them into a place or set them up where it's adjacent to 2 bedding areas that those bucks like to move back and forth. And I know he's going to see multiple bucks, just not one. Or multiple deer, period, too. Like in areas that I know that, like, even like a lot of times when people come down, like if you ever came down, I would go scout a couple days before and watch what some of these deer are doing. Kind of like what a guide would do. And then I would know exactly what these deer are doing. And I know we're going to see multiple deer and a couple shooters.
Well, you know, John's not here. He always asks, you know, what's your bow setup? What are you shooting? Arrows, broadheads, the whole works.
Well, I'm not into all the ranch fairy stuff, but I still shoot a big two blade. I shot these expandables that were a two blade hybrid for a while, but they're so hard to come by now that I just don't even shoot them anymore just for that factor. But I shoot a 70 pound draw carbon knight by Bowtech, and I've shot that bow since it came out in 2013. And I mean, why reinvent the wheel when I'm killing deer with it anyways? And it shoots just fine. And then I shoot full metal jackets that are 340 spine out of 100 grain broadhead, two blade that I buy off Amazon in a 24 pack. Nothing fancy.
And what sight are you using?
I think it's a Trophy Ridge, actually. And it's five pins. But what's funny is that in 2016, I actually started using a sight. Before that, I was instinctive the whole entire time. That's so awesome. I mean, I've shot a lot of deer instinctive too, which is, it's fun. But I'm getting to the case that if I know I can get to these deer under 20 yards, I want to start shooting a recurve. I just haven't picked out one that I really want yet.
Well, now that you say that, I have to ask, you know, in 2016 or prior, were you shooting a release or were you shooting these deer with fingers too?
I was shooting a release because okay. you still got the same anchor point. It kind of helped out. But I mean, even then I was still shooting decent bucks under 20 yards, even though I would say half the time was luck and half the other half was, I kind of knew what I was doing, but not really either at the same time. And I mean, I have no problem admitting to it that like I've grown as a hunter and I've learned where to be and not to be. But I mean, it's always a guessing game, no matter if you know what you're doing or not. Because that deer might not be there, or someone because of hunting public land could have already went and walked through there and scouted and kicked him out and you never knew it.
Well, man, I really appreciate finally getting you on here and talking. Where can people follow along if they want to see, you know, some of these photos or any of the videos they have, any of that stuff?
Well, you can find me on DDHunter12 on Instagram, and then also our pages on Facebook and Instagram is From Bed to Dead, and that's with Jason Campbell. And I think we got three other guys that are on there too. And then we have a YouTube channel too. But I mean, Jason's in the middle of building the house right now. We're finishing that up and we don't have any of our content from last year out just yet, but we will here soon, eventually. I mean, it's just huge time consuming. And then, I mean, I work 6-7 days a week too right now. So.
Oh yeah. We know all about that. Trying to get content and videos and all that stuff out there.
It's just so overwhelming sometimes. And I mean, like Jason's super busy. And then, I mean, he's being pulled in like 15 different directions because he's always getting people contacting him too. And then, I mean, I have people talk to me all the time. And I mean, thankfully that I work nights and I can hunt every day during their season. And that's why I've learned so much over the years. But besides that, I mean, we're always busy. I mean, I work for Pepsi, so I mean, everybody wants pop and water, so.
Right, right. Well, man, I really appreciate it. And just hold on the line here. But I think that's all we got for the evening. So, thanks.
Yeah.